Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the 286-horsepower TL Type S with a sport-tuned suspension. Learn more at Acura.com.
A warning. There is language in this program that some listeners might find offensive. This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, November 15th, 2007. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, the winner of the National Book Award for Poetry. Last night in New York, Robert Haas won for his book, Time and Materials. Robert Haas has been a big presence in American poetry ever since his first book won the Yale Younger Series Award in 1973. That book was called Field Guide, and as the title suggests, the poems closely observe the natural world, mostly the dry, grassy coastal California mountains. They also simultaneously wonder about any number of more philosophic or intellectual concerns. One critic said of his early work that his poems translate the natural world into one's private history. In the many books of poetry that followed, including this most recent one, Haas tackles the complexities of language and experience with conversational panache. On today's program, we're going to hear him read and talk about three poems from previous books. The Yellow Bicycle comes from his second book, Praise, which was published in 1979. It's a lyrical love poem that takes a sudden detour into prose halfway through.
The Yellow Bicycle. The woman I love is greedy, but she refuses greed. She walks so straightly. When I ask her what she wants, she says, a yellow bicycle. Sun, sunflower, colt's foot on the roadside, a goldfinch, the sign that says yield, her hair, cat's eyes, his hunger, and a yellow bicycle. Once, when they had made love in the middle of the night, and it was very sweet, they decided they were hungry, so they got up, got dressed, and drove downtown to an all-night donut shop. Chicano kids lounged outside, a few drunks, and one black man selling dope. Just at the entrance, there was an old woman in a thin floral print dress. She was barefoot. Her face was covered with sores and dry, peeling skin. The sores looked like raisins, and her skin was the dry yellow of a parchment lampshade ravaged by light and tossed away. They thought she must have been hungry, and coming out again with a white paper bag full of hot rolls, they stopped to offer her one. She looked at them out of her small eyes, bewildered, and shook her head for a little while and said, very kindly, no. Her song to the yellow bicycle. The boats on the bay have nothing on you, my swan, my sleek one.
Let me ask you, the form in this is rather surprising because there's a prose section right in the middle of it.
Yeah, it was interesting to me. I had set myself the task of writing a bunch of small poems in each of which the phrase, the yellow bicycle, occurred. And at a certain point, it started to feel like shtick to me, you know. When Garcia Lorca died, the police broke open the oldest whorehouse in Madrid, and they found out that it was full of the broken parts of yellow bicycles. When, you know, you could kind of just keep inventing things like that. It was very much actually the style in those years to imitate that kind of play in French surrealist poetry. And at a certain point, I thought it would be interesting to put something up against the lyricism that in some way said no. And so this little prose piece and the old woman saying no to the lovers came into it. And the form made me very happy for some reason because I hadn't seen anything like it quite.
And it kind of fits the context because what you say in the prose section is basically a refutation of the lover's feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if refutation is
But it spoils their good mood.
It puts a contrary in action or something like that.
They thought she must have been hungry, and coming out again with a white paper bag full of hot rolls, they stopped to offer her one. She looked at them out of her small eyes, bewildered, and shook her head for a little while and said, very kindly, no.
The next poem is from Hass's 1989 collection, Human Wishes. It's called Misery and Splendor, and it's about the powerful urges that make us want to almost obliterate ourselves in erotic union with another person. When I first read it, I thought for sure it was a gloss on the famous myth about erotic love from Plato's Symposium, the one where Aristophanes says that people were once a single creature with four arms and four legs, but we got too powerful, so Zeus split us into two separate beings, and ever since then we've been desperately trying to reunite with our other half. Anyhow, that's what I thought of when I first encountered this poem.
Misery and Splendor. Summoned by conscious recollection, she would be smiling. They might be in a kitchen talking before or after dinner, but they are in this other room. The window has many small panes, and they are on a couch, embracing. He holds her as tightly as he can. She buries herself in his body. Morning, maybe it is evening, light is flowing through the room. Outside, the day is slowly succeeded by night, succeeded by day. The process wobbles wildly and accelerates. Weeks, months, years. The light in the room does not change, so it is plain what is happening. They are trying to become one creature, and something will not have it. They are tender with each other, afraid their brief, sharp cries will reconcile them to the moment when they fall away again. So they rub against each other, their mouths dry, then wet, then dry. They feel themselves at the center of a powerful and baffled will. They feel they are an almost animal, washed up on the shore of a world or huddled against the gate of a garden to which they can't admit they can never be admitted.
Just out of curiosity, were you thinking of the Platonic myth about the...
No, I was thinking about dry fucking. I was thinking about a relationship that might be like dry fucking.
Here I'm thinking this high cultural reference. Okay, good.
But I know that was there. You know, the Plato story is there, and the Eden myth is
there. They're both sort of buried there. Yeah,
they're trying to become one creature, and something will not have it. They are tender with each other, afraid their brief, sharp cries will reconcile them to the moment when they fall away again.
The last poem we're going to hear is called Sonnet. It doesn't have the rhyme scheme of a sonnet. In fact, it doesn't rhyme at all. Nor does it employ ye old iambic pentameter.
But I thought it was in the territory of the sonnet at the beginning of the 21st century.
It starts as a poem about broken love, but its attention drifts towards an image of ideal love.
Sonnet. A man talking to his ex-wife on the phone. He has loved her voice and listens with attention to every modulation of its tone, knowing it intimately, not knowing what he wants from the sound of it, from the tendered civility. He studies out the window the seed shapes of the broken pods of ornamental trees, the kind that grow in everyone's garden, that no one but horticulturists can name. Four arched chambers of pale green, tiny vegetal procession arches, a pair of black tapering seeds bedded in each chamber, a wish geometry, miniature, Indian or Persian, lovers or gods in their apartments. Outside, white, patient animals, entangled vines, and rain.
The tree in that poem is actually called a golden rain tree. I know because there's one on my old block that I used to admire, and I'm standing in front of it now. My daughter and I used to like to pick those seed pods and break them open.
Let me grab. four arched chambers of pale green, tiny vegetal procession arches, a pair of black tapering seeds bedded in each chamber, a wish geometry, miniature, Indian or Persian, lovers or gods in their apartments.
This one, this seed pod is brown and all dried out now. But just like in the poem, there's two black seeds still in there. They're incredibly glossy and beautiful, almost as if they've been lacquered. It really is a beautiful image for a couple, separate from the world, yet bedded together in a kind of Asiatic splendor. And weirdly enough, the weather today is just as it is in the poem.
Outside, white, patient animals, entangled vines, and rain.
Robert Hass is the winner of the 2007 National Book Award for Poetry. The book that won it is called Time and Materials, and it's published by HarperCollins. On our website, poetryfoundation.org, you can read all the poems you heard here, plus a bunch more, plus articles about him. He's a favorite of a lot of contemporary poets, and poetryfoundation.org asked five of them to choose and comment on their favorite Hass poem. Check it out, all on poetryfoundation.org. Do let us know what you think of this program, where our motto is...
You should never explain a poem, but it always helps nevertheless.
Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The music used in this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.